So as I said, I'm going to get into the book of Daniel. We're going to go through the entire book. It's one of those Old Testament books that a lot of people, I think, somewhat familiar with, if not the book itself, maybe the story about Daniel in the lion's den. If you have to read something in the Old Testament, Daniel's probably one of those books a lot of people go to. It's only 12 chapters long. The stories, maybe they stop at chapter 6 because there's a lot of visions and dreams in 7 through 12 that are like, what is he talking about? But chapter 1 through 6 is just some great stories. It's like picking up a book and just reading that. So that's where we're going to start. Chapter 1 through 6 is a series of stories about Daniel and his friends in an empire. And we're going to learn a little bit about that empire and what's going on. Chapter 7 through 12 are some crazy visions that Daniel has that lots of people within the church have had a lot of fun trying to explain what those visions mean. And it's all across the board. I'm going to try my best to make sense of that using a series of commentaries to help me make sense of that. But we're going to begin at the beginning, Daniel chapter 1. And as I said, I wasn't necessarily thinking all this when I chose this section of scripture to go through a couple months ago, probably. But I think it is fitting for what we're experiencing right now, for what Daniel and his friends had to go through. And it's going to be, I think, a good reminder for us and what we're facing with this global pandemic, just the craziness that it seems like we're living through right now. We are living within an empire. We don't call it that. We don't use that word anymore, empire. But really, living in America, you are a part of an empire. Everywhere you go all over the world, there's little trappings of America. The number one language people want to learn is English. When we did mission trips over to Ukraine and different places, we were doing English camps because people want to learn English. Everywhere I went, if I went into New Delhi Airport, I could find a McDonald's or a Kentucky Fried Chicken or something like that. No matter what restaurant I go into, all over the world, when I've been in Liberia, when I've been in Turkey, when I've been all these places, I can order a Coca-Cola. I mean, it comes warm usually, but you can still get it. So America has influenced the world in lots of ways. You know that. I'm not telling you anything new. We just don't use that word empire, but that is what we're living in the midst of. And so Daniel and his buddies were doing that same thing. And how do you live in the midst of that and still stay faithful to the kingdom that Jesus set up? And that's the challenge that we have. Now, obviously, they were living in a different kind of challenge, but the goal of any time we open up the Word and try and figure out what is Daniel saying to the people he was talking to, how does that fit the 21st century? This book was written a long, long time ago to people very different and cultures very different than ours. So how does that fit into my experience, what I'm going through? And so that's my challenge. I'm going to try and do that for you. Hopefully it makes sense. Hopefully this helps you in terms of how we live in 21st century America. So to get an idea of what's happening here, I'm going to set it up in this way. Now, there were some people here this morning that were familiar with this because they also went to boot camp. Did anybody else go to boot camp in the military? Scott, you did, right? So maybe this, maybe you have some idea of what boot camp might be like, and I'm going to use that, but maybe you worked at a job or something and you went through training. It's a new job, new position, and you've got to learn what this job is all about, and that company is trying to enculturate you. They're trying to help you learn about who they are, what makes them tick, what is the culture of this company, and so maybe you go through, you know, 3 weeks of training, maybe longer, whatever. But to get an idea of what Daniel and his buddies are going through, I'm just going to use my experience as going to the Navy. So August 8th of 2000, I left Harrisburg MEPS Station as an 18-year-old know-it-all, and I flew to Great Lakes, Illinois, got to Navy boot camp, and the first thing that happened, I got to talk to my parents for about 2.5 seconds to say I'm alive and I'm here. You hang up the phone, go sit on the stool, and buzz your hair. All the hair is gone. Not that I have lots of it anyway, but it was all gone. And so now I have no clothes. But thankfully, the Navy gives me clothes. They're called uniforms. And nobody knows me by Ted. It's Rathman, or Seaman Recruit, whatever. and you're a part of Division 439, and you know, they're trying to teach you something. So from the name that you receive, the clothes you put on, cutting all your hair off, I went to different classes. We had when you walked from one place to the next, it wasn't like you just strolled along and said, "Oh, that's a nice day." You got in line and you marched. And you marched from this place to that place. You did drills. You went to a class. You learned all the ranks in the Navy. You learned some history about the Navy. You learned what your job was or what the Navy does. The Navy is trying to make you, me, and whatever other person goes, a sailor. I'm going to put you on this ship. And these, depending how big it is, you got to make sure you do your job right and you do the right thing so that nobody dies. And so they're trying to take these recruits and make them into sailors. If you went into the Army, they're trying to make you soldiers, and the Marines trying to do the same thing. That is what they're doing. They're trying to take this person, and they're giving you, in a way, a new identity. So when I had to fill out applications because I believed I was called to ministry, wanted to be a pastor, they asked on my application, what are your core values? So anytime I fill out an application for anything, they ask me my core values. I mean, I've Christianized it, but it's honor, courage, commitment. That's what I said over and over in the Navy, honor, courage, commitment. That's the motto of the Navy, and that kind of became a part of me. They're trying to give you this identity for a reason. And, you know, companies do the same thing, and, you know, that happens if you've never went to boot camp and didn't experience that. But that's exactly what's going on with Daniel and his buddies. They are trying to make them what is called Babylonians. That's what the empire was of Daniel's day. He was living in this empire called Babylon. And so what you're going to hear in Daniel chapter 1, I'm going to read that for you in just a minute. What you're going to hear is Daniel and his buddies going to Babylon so that they can make them Babylonians. Now, Daniel 1 is setting up the rest of Daniel. The rest of this book, the stories in it, the visions he's having are all set up while Daniel is in exile, and not his home, but a very different culture and kingdom. In fact, opposite of the one that he was living in. You couldn't get any further from Israel and what they believed than Babylon. They were like complete opposites. So when Daniel and his buddies go, they're trying to make them Babylonians, and that means you got to believe certain things, you got to worship certain gods. They're going to teach you stuff that from a kid on up you were never supposed to do, like divination and things like that. In Daniel's culture, they were trying to figure out what are the gods doing? Because if you had a drought, the god is mad about something. How do we get on the god's good side? And so we have magicians, and we have people that figure that out, and they say, well, I think this means you've got to sacrifice these animals, and you got to do X, and you got to do Y. If you do all that, they're going to be happy with you again, and they're going to send rain. That's how they figured stuff out then. And so Daniel and his buddies have to learn those arts. And so they're trying to be enculturated within this empire that they're living in. And Daniel and his buddies are trying to figure out, how do I not just survive and muddle through this? How do we thrive within this culture that we are being exiled to? And so Daniel 1 is going to set up the rest of the story for us of what he and his buddies are trying to do. And I hope as I talk through this that you'll be able to hear some similarities of the culture and the world and the empire we live in. And how are we then supposed to not just kind of muddle through life, but how do we thrive in life? And so Daniel and his buddies are going to tell us that story, but it begins with this empire called Babylon. And it says this in Daniel chapter 1. This is still bring your own Bible to church. We usually have them in the front of the pew, but because of everything, we took them out. So Daniel 1, if you don't have your Bible with you, you can just listen along and let the humidity and the closeness and the mugginess just kind of weigh you down. No, don't do that, because then you'll fall asleep. But you can listen. You just have to listen. And here's the story. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, this was the southern kingdom of Israel. The kingdoms had split apart. And the north was gone. They were obliterated. All that was left with the southern kingdom, and they're about to disappear too. In that year of that king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. Jerusalem is no more. This was like 587 BC-ish time frame. It's gone. So in the Lord, it says this in verse 2, and the Lord delivered Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, along with some of the articles from the temple of God. These he carried off to the temple of his God in Babylonia and put it in the treasure house of his God. See, what you did as a conquering king, this empire of Babylon, whenever you conquered somebody, most people had a temple to their gods. This wasn't new. It wasn't like Israel was different. Everybody had a temple, and in the temple were the gods. So if you beat somebody else, you took their gods and said, we are more powerful than you. We're going to take your little gods out of your temple, and we're going to put them in our temple. And we're going to show you that we are the most powerful empire on the planet. Now, the problem was in Israel, there was no, like, image to their god. So they just took stuff out of the temple. Different things they would have used for worship and sacrifices, gold, and just different stuff within the temple. Maybe they take down our nice gold candelabras and they take them back to their temple. All of it is trying to say, we're more powerful than you. Our gods are better than your gods. And that's just what happened here. So not only are they taking stuff at the temple, but we find they're also taking people. Then in verse 3 it says, then the king ordered Ashpenaz, chief of his court officials. I like Ashpenaz. If we ever had another child, I think I'd name them Ashpenaz. It's just fun to say. Ashpenaz. Go ahead, say it. Ashpenaz. Don't. They didn't in the first service either. You don't have to. So he calls this guy, Ashpenaz, to bring into the king's service some of the Israelites from the royal family and nobility. Young men without any physical defect, handsome, showing aptitude for every kind of learning, well-informed, quick to understand, qualified to serve the king's palace. So this is like the best. These were guys that would have served in some way in the royal court of Israel. They were being groomed to be some kind of government official, some kind of leader within the country. And so what the Babylonians did is they said, we're going to take you and we're going to make you Babylonians and you're going to do that in our empire. So that's what we're doing here. They're doing the Navy thing. We're going to take you there, we're going to shave your heads, and we're going to teach you all about the Navy. Except we're going to teach you all about Babylon. So he was to teach these people coming the language and the literature of the Babylonians. The king assigned them a daily amount of food and wine from the king's table, and they were to be trained for 3 years, and after those 3 years, they would enter into the king's service. You would become some kind of government official in Babylon. So now you are a Babylonian. We're going to teach you the language, and we're gonna teach you all the literature. We're going to teach you how to do the divination stuff, you know, all the stuff that you were never supposed to do as a good Jew. You never did any of that stuff. We're going to teach you how to do all of it because that's what we do in Babylon. And so now these guys are learning things that they were told they never should do. And it was against the laws of Israel to do them. So now we're going to find out who these guys are. It's not everybody. We're going to learn about Daniel and a couple of his buddies and how they lived this out. So among the people being taken from Israel to Babylon, they were chosen from Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. These are the four guys we're going to kind of learn about. And the chief official gave them new names. To Daniel, the name Belteshazzar. To Hananiah, Shadrach. To Mishael, Meshach. And to Azariah, Abednego. Now, if you're familiar with any of Daniel, you might have heard those names before. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And of course, Daniel. But they all got different names because naming somebody, you change their identity in some way. That's what it was. If you could name a god or something like that, you were able to assume that power. But giving them a different name was part of changing who they were. And these names would have been different than, of course, the names they had Daniel, which is talking about who God is. These would have been names kind of serving these Babylonian gods. So them holding their names was even a big deal. And naming someone has this kind of power over it. I remember when Leah found out that her dad's name wasn't Ted. My first name, maybe this is going to blow some of you away, but my first name is actually John. She was like, what? Are you really my dad? Your name is John? She was like, that's weird. I feel like I don't know you. So they're trying very hard to make these guys Babylonians. And the name is actually saying something about the Babylonian gods. So now it's like, your God wasn't even powerful enough to save you. We're going to give you a name from one of our gods. So that's what they were trying to do. We're going to feed you certain stuff. We're going to give you new names. You're going to learn all this stuff for 3 years. We're going to make you Babylonians. You are going to be a part of this Babylonian empire. But, verse 8 says, Daniel resolved not to defile himself with the royal food and wine and asked the chief official for permission not to defile himself in this way. Now God caused the official to show favor and compassion to Daniel. But the official told Daniel, I'm afraid of my lord the king who has assigned your food and drink to me. Why should he see you looking worse than all the other young men your age? The king would then have my head because of you. So he's asking the chief official, I don't want to eat the food off the king's table because I don't want to defile myself in that way. You can give me new names. You can teach me what you want to teach me, but I'm not going to eat that food. And the chief official's like, so you're going to come out here, you're going to look weak, and like you haven't eaten in days, like you're starving, and the king's going to basically chop my head off because I'm not doing what I'm supposed to do. No, we're not going to do that. However, Daniel then said to the guard, the guy that was actually going to be overseeing all these exiles and making sure they're doing what they're supposed to be doing, Daniel said to the guard, whom the chief official appointed over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, please test your servants for these 10 days. Give us nothing but vegetables to eat water, or give us nothing but vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then compare our appearance with that of the young men who eat the royal food and treat your servants in accordance with what you see. So the guard's like, all right, I'm willing to make that happen. I'm just going to give you these vegetables and this water. You're not going to eat off the king's table, and in 10 days we'll see what happens. So the guard took away the choice food and the wine, and they were to drink, and he gave them vegetables instead. To these four young men, God gave knowledge and understanding, all kinds of literature and learning, and Daniel could understand visions and dreams of all kinds. Now that's going to be very important as we go to chapter 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. At the end of the time set by the king to bring them into service, the chief official presented them to Nebuchadnezzar. And the king talked with them, and he found none equal to Daniel and Hananiah and Mishael and Azariah. So they entered the king's service. In every matter of wisdom and understanding about the king, what the king questioned them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and enchanters in his whole kingdom. And Daniel remained there until the first year of King Cyrus. So Daniel served multiple emperors, multiple kings. And what we find happening here in this story of Daniel is a clash of kings and cultures. Daniel's king, who is Yahweh, God, and the Babylonians. And these cultures are clashing because they're trying to make Daniel and his buddies exactly like Babylonians. We're going to give you new names. We're going to do all this stuff for you. And really what's taking place in all of the book of Daniel, from chapter 1 to the very end, it's the biggest battle that there is. It's a cosmic battle that we are still engaged in, that living here in the United States of America, North America, and the West, we've kind of put God, or we've put supernatural, like God, stuff we can't just explain with our senses. You know, I can't do it, put it in some kind of scientific formula, and if I can't do that, then it must not be real. And so there's this cosmic battle that's taking place, and most religions all over the world believe that same thing. That there's this cosmic battle, these evil forces and these forces of good. And really, this is what Daniel is talking about. It's this battle that's been raging ever since the garden, when human beings try to put themselves in the place of God and were cast out, exiled from the garden, Adam and Eve. In this particular story, in Daniel, we have this matchup. The gods of Babylon versus the God of Israel. And that's the story here. Who is going to win? Well, it seems like the gods of Babylon are beating pretty handily the God of Israel. But three times, maybe you didn't catch it here, the NIV, that's what I'm using translation, says delivered. If you read verse 2, and the Lord delivered Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into the hand, along with some of the articles from the temple of God, into the hands of Nebuchadnezzar. You can also translate that God gave. Three times it says that. So it seems the author of Daniel, the book of Daniel, is trying to already in chapter 1 let us know that it wasn't the Babylonians that came in and knocked out Israel. It was the fact that God allowed Jehoiakim, the king of Judah, to be handed over to Babylon. And God gave favor to Daniel and his friends through that chief official who Daniel was talking with. And God gave Daniel and his buddies favor in making them the wisest that the king had, 10 times better. They were more Babylonian than these guys. And they weren't even Babylonians. So from the very beginning, we see this clash of kings and cultures, God of Israel versus God of Babylon. And Daniel already wants to make sure we get in our minds that the God of Israel is not losing this battle. And so he uses words for a reason. God gave the king of Israel into the hands of Nebuchadnezzar, of this king of Babylon. It wasn't the king of Babylon's giant army that did this. It was God allowing it to happen. And so Daniel and his buddies are now the main characters in our story. And we follow them around as they live in exile in Babylon. How do we still follow the God of Israel when they're trying to make us Babylonians? And we get a little picture of that right in Daniel chapter 1, and that's going to play out. This is setting the stage for the rest of the book. It's going to play out how Daniel and his buddies try and hold on to their true identity as followers of Yahweh, living in the midst of this culture. And so as they are being enculturated, like I gave you the story about the Navy and trying to make us sailors, this is exactly what's happening to Daniel. As that is happening, they are supposed to serve in the king's court. They are now going to be his government officials. And they're going to advise the king. They're going to try and help the king. And they do. Through Daniel and his buddies, he blesses the world around them. So God is simply fulfilling what he told Abraham back in Genesis chapter 12, that through you, Abraham, and this covenant I'm making with you, I'm going to bless all people. And it happens. But how do you do that? How do you not just survive this time of exile? How do you thrive in it? And that's the question Daniel and his buddies are faced with. So one of the things that we see Daniel doing, and then we're going to jump into our current day. One of the things we see Daniel and his buddies doing is they were trying to figure out, how do we not completely get absorbed into this culture that is so different from us, that really believes the exact opposite of us? How do we continue to show that there is only one true God, Yahweh, the God of Israel, living in the midst of this culture? And so the way that they do that, they took their new names and they answered to them. It's not like they ignore the government officials when they say, hey, Belteshazzar, come over here. No, I am Daniel, and unless you call me Daniel, I'm not walking over there. They take these new names, they learn the language, they learn the culture, the literature, they learn all that stuff, but they say, we don't want to eat your food. Now, the story of Daniel is not really just trying to give you instructions on nutrition. There's a thing called the Daniel Plan that was created off of this, that you're just supposed to eat vegetables and drink water or whatever. That's not what's going on here. I think it's great if you want to eat healthy and do those healthy things. That's important. But that's not the point of Daniel 1, is to create a nutrition plan for you. What they were saying was, we're going to show you that our God's going to take care of us. We're going to eat all this stuff that you think is going to make us look like we're malnourished. That's what he was afraid of. No, don't do that, because you're going to look like you haven't eaten anything, and the kid's going to chop my head off. So Daniel and his buddies say, we'll take those names, we'll do this, but we're not going to do this. Please allow us to do this so that they could show them that our God, the God of Israel, Yahweh, will take care of us. He will provide for us. He will supply for us. He is the one true God, and we'll show that to you through how we live our lives. So while everybody else is scarfing up the king's food, they don't eat that. And they turned out to be the top four of their class. So after 3 years and they graduated, they were the valedictorians of their class, these four guys. And in this small way, they were saying, We may have to live here. You may be the most powerful empire in the world. You may have destroyed our entire home, but we are not going to bow to your gods. In this battle of clash of kings and cultures, God, the gods of Babylon versus the God of Israel, there is only one winner, and that's the God that we serve. And Daniel chapter 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 is going to show us that story. How, in fact, in this battle of the ages, this cosmic battle of evil forces trying to push against God's rule and reign, there is only one victor, and that God is the God of Israel. So Daniel is setting this up from the very beginning to show everybody that Daniel wasn't the only guy and his buddies living in exile. All the Jews were living in exile. And this story was to bring hope to them, to help them realize that you can thrive in the midst of any culture on this planet, even these empires that are directly opposed to the God that you and I serve. In fact, the capital of Babylonia was a city called Babylon. And you can also translate Babylon, Shinar, S-H-I-N-A-R. The last time we heard that word was Genesis 11 at the Tower of Babel, when human beings were setting themselves up in place of God. We are gods. And it was in that place that God judged that and scattered people all over the planet. And the book of Daniel is going to show us one more time, what does it look like when human beings put themselves in the place of God? And that's what the king of Babylon was trying to do. He was putting himself in the place of God and saying, I am the most powerful person in this world. Even the words I speak are like coming from the gods, and you will worship and bow down to me. That's the culture Daniel's buddies were walking into. And they said, we'll do all these things, but so that you're going to know there is only one true God, and this cosmic battle we're engaged in, there is only one victor. We're not going to eat your food. Now, next week, you'll hear some more stories about what else did they do to show that there was only one ruler who reigns supreme. So in the midst of all this, in the midst of what's going on in Daniel and his buddies' lives, the story of Daniel is going to make clear, the whole book. This is like a bird's eye view looking down. This is what the story of Daniel is trying to get across to all of us as readers, whether you're reading it in 580 BC or whatever, or if you're going to read it in 2020. In spite of present circumstances that make it seem like it really appears that evil is winning the day, the book of Daniel is to remind us that God will reign supreme and will have the final victory. Now, when I read that I was reading a commentary, a book that helps me figure out what's going on in Daniel. There's a lot of more smart people than me who do all this, and I just try and put it all together and help it make sense. Hopefully it does. But as I'm reading that, I'm like, you know what? I've felt that way. In my present circumstances, it really does appear sometimes that evil is prevailing. If you were here two Sundays ago, before I was on vacation, if you were here for the marathon sermon, I should make t-shirts for you because you survived that. It really felt like to me that evil was prevailing, and it bothered me and it concerned me. And then I prepare for Daniel and read Daniel chapter 1, and you know what? That was me. It feels like evil is prevailing, and sometimes I forget that we are engaged. You and I are engaged, whether you know it or not, whether you have realized it or not, whether science can prove it or not. There's a cosmic battle going on, and we see it happening all around us. The forces of darkness who want to destroy the rule and reign of God. It's been happening since Genesis, and it continues to this very day. And the battles that we are faced with are not simply against that person or that political party or that politician or that coworker or this person. The forces that we are actually battling are much bigger than that. But Daniel is telling us that even in spite of what we see when I turn on the news, when I read an article and I read the paper, In spite of all that, God will reign supreme and will have the final victory. And that is what Daniel chapter 1 is trying to get across. When God gives into the hands of this Babylonian king, this empire, when these cultures and kings clash together, there is only one winner through it all. And Daniel says that is God. And because that is God, what we're going to see in Daniel's story and what I think is important for us, because you and I live in an empire. We don't call it an empire, but we live in one. And we've been swimming in this culture for a long time, some of us longer than others, but we can't assume that our culture doesn't affect the way that we live, the way that we think, our value system, our beliefs. It does. And these are the three things I think is needed. I think Daniel and his buddies display these three characteristics so that they can go to Babylon and say, look, this is our conviction. I'm not going to eat that food. And you'll see that our God will take care of us. And because they knew that in spite of their circumstances, God will reign supreme, they lived with hope. You can't possibly thrive in exile, away from your home, as some kind of prisoner, if you are hopeless. Hopelessness does not breed thriving in life or as a human being. So because Daniel and his buddies had hope in the reality that God is going to reign supreme, and we're going to show you that by the way we live, they had confidence that when they weren't eating the food that the king was giving, and they were just doing their own thing, they had confidence that God was going to care for them. And we see that happening. The language being used there is what wisdom literature would use. These were the wisest men living in the king's court. They got knowledge and understanding, and they were 10 times better than all the magicians in the entire empire because they had confidence that God, in the midst of our exile, was going to care for us. And because of that hope, and they lived that way, because of the confidence they had, they lived with courage. I mean, they could have just killed those guys. Wait, you're not going to eat our food? Not good enough for you? All right, see here, you're gone. What did they care? They had courage to say, look, this is our conviction, so that you're going to know that we serve the one true God. We're not going to eat your food. Anything could have happened to them. And we're going to see they're going to need some more of that courage as they decide, I am not going to budge from this conviction. And if we're going to live within this kingdom, because the reality is, and this is more so evident than maybe ever before, for a while, the kingdom of God, the kingdom that Jesus set up, that he inaugurated on this earth when he came, for a while, they were kind of walking side by side, the empire that you and I live in, and the kingdom that Jesus was setting up. I mean, that was the big problem in Jesus' day. The Romans were the one kingdom. Who does this guy think he is, saying he is the king of kings? But for a while in the empire you and I live in, we were kind of walking side by side. Yeah, it's good. You should go to church. You should, you know, teach your kids this stuff. We're going to put it up in all these different government buildings. And even when a friend of mine who's only probably 45 when he was in school, you know what, one of the teachers read out of the Bible in the beginning. So it was like, okay, we'll walk hand in hand. But now we're starting to experience what does it really look like when cultures and kings clash? And the gods that the American culture serves begin to clash with the God of Israel, with the kingdom that was inaugurated through Jesus Christ. What happens when those kingdoms clash? Well, we're starting to feel that. We're starting to experience some of that. The value systems and beliefs that you and I have are beginning to clash with the value system and beliefs that are not like ours. And we're being told that you need to give that kind of stuff up. If I would say God designed me to be a certain way, that from the created order of things, God made them male and female, and you're going to leave your mother and father, and you're going to be united to this guy, and you're going to get married, and that's my value system, my belief system, and it's not something that it's a culture that I'm beginning to clash with. Wait a second, I thought we were kind of on the same page with this stuff. And what we're finding is we're not. we're actually being reminded that there is this cosmic battle taking place. Except it's not the gods of Babylon anymore, it's the gods of America. Whether it's fame, whether it's fortune, whether it's power, whether it's getting tons of likes on this latest video you have, whether it's just kind of agreeing with your friends because it's easier, or with your family because it's easier than actually taking a stand for what we believe, whether it's entire church denominations just kind of laying down and saying, you know what, we give up, the Bible isn't true, it's not real, whatever, okay, we want to be, you know, on the same side, and it's happening all around us. And it's reminding me, as I look at my present circumstance, maybe you don't feel the same way I do, but I needed this reminder. There's something bigger going on here. And it's this battle between the forces of darkness that are seeking to destroy the rule and reign of God. And I live inside of an empire, but I want to be a part of this other kingdom. And the kingdom that Jesus set up, for me to live that out in the midst of an empire, I'm going to need some courage, some confidence, and some hope to make that happen. Otherwise, it's just going to be trying to muddle through. And for the church of Jesus Christ to be the church in the midst of this empire, we're going to need some of that too. Because what we're finding out is that our value system is no longer matching up. We're starting to see some clashes all over the place. And maybe in some places we didn't think we'd see those clashes. But it's happening. And Paul reminds the church in a city called Ephesus, that was in Turkey area. He reminded the church back in the first century of this, and the words are just as true today. He's reminding us. In Ephesians chapter 6, verse 10, it says, finally, he's getting ready to close his letter because they were experiencing the same thing. Evil seemed to be winning the day in the town they lived in too. And Paul says, finally, be strong in the Lord and in his mighty power. Put on the full armor of God so that you can take your stand against the schemes of the devil. When we did our Asked and Answered series and we talked about evil and facing evil, and I brought up the fact that Satan is opposed to God and has all these schemes and he is pushing back on God's rule and reign, somebody made a comment about, you know, I get what he's trying to say, but that's kind of fairy tale-ish, don't you think? Come on. Some guy with horns and a pitchfork is running around trying to thwart, you know, God's plans and stuff. Give me a break. Paul says you need to be able to stand against when the culture and the kings and queens start pushing and clashing against the one that you were trying to live in. You need to put on this full armor of God to stand against that. For our struggle, that's us, all of our struggle, is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms. We are in the midst of a battle, just like Daniel and his buddies were. Now, Daniel's story is to make sure Babylon knew who's going to win this battle. And he set that up from Daniel chapter 1. But they're going to be challenged in the midst of this battle. Do we just assume everything that the Babylonians do and just make it easier on ourselves? And just become like them? We got the names, we got everything else, we might as well go full bore. Or do we stand firm in what we believe, and that the God of Israel is the one true God? They were faced with that. And in doing that, are we going to be able to thrive? Are we going to survive this thing? The book of Daniel says, yes, you can. In the midst of living in this different kingdom, you can survive. That is the greatest challenge that we have as followers of Jesus. Are we willing to live in the empire we find ourselves as this subversive kingdom, the kingdom that Jesus inaugurated? Daniel's trying to say, I'm giving you a message of hope, Jews, Christians, of every day and of every age. A message of hope that despite, in spite of the present circumstances where it seems like evil is prevailing, God will win the day. That is a message of hope. And that should motivate your faithfulness to this message. So the kingdom that Jesus has set up, that I raised my hand to and said, I'm a part of that kingdom. Am I going to be faithful to that when our cultures begin to clash? And when we're no longer really walking side by side, holding hands and skipping down the road, but the gods of our world are trying to say to the God of the universe, we are more powerful than you. Who am I going to serve? Because at times, it's a lot easier just to serve the gods of this world. And unless we start living with that hope, and that was a message to myself when I'm reading Daniel and saying, you know what, Ted? You are too focused down here. You are missing the big picture of what Paul is saying. Of that, yes, it seems like evil is having its way right now. But God will win the day. And he has set up his church to push back the forces of darkness. That is why Jesus is called the light of the world. Because one day Jesus will reign supreme. And he will set all things right. All the things we see that are messed up, Jesus will put it all back together. He started doing that when he came. And he wasn't simply a God of, I'm stronger and more powerful than you. He was a God who made himself into a slave, even to the point of death and being hung on a cross. That's how God's kingdom starts. It's not by an invading army wiping out somebody else. It's by people bowing their knee to the cross and saying, I'm going to live in this kingdom, in the one that Jesus set up. And it's going to take some courage to do that. But I can be confident in that God will care for me, he'll care for my family, and I can live with hope, not just muddle through life, but thrive in it. Because God will reign supreme. And we keep meeting like this because we're waiting for Jesus to come back again and put that final stamp, that final blow to those evil forces that we are fighting against, to say that I am the King of all kings. I am the God over all other gods. And he comes again and he sets up his kingdom to rule and to reign for all of eternity. Until that day comes, we, like Daniel, are challenged. How are we going to live within this kingdom? With courage and confidence and hope in the one true God? To stand firm and put on that armor that we need to stand against that? Or to succumb and let our convictions go and not stand for what we believe in? So next week, Daniel's going to give us another story of the challenges we face living within an empire and be reminded of this courage and confidence and hope that we need. But ultimately, the bird's eye view is to remind us that God will reign supreme and have the final victory. And Jesus will come again as a conquering king to set up his kingdom. Let's pray. God, we're thankful in the midst of our present circumstances that we can be reminded of your rule and your reign in this world. And God, that begins in each of our hearts and our willingness to serve you, our willingness to stand firm in what we believe and to have the courage to do that, Lord, the confidence in that you will care for us and our families and our needs, that you will watch over and use your church, and God, that hope that that brings in our lives, that we're not just muddling through this thing we call life, but we're actually thriving in it. God, I pray this morning that as we leave and folks listening at home, as we go back into this week, we go back into this world of clashing kings and cultures, of gods of the 21st century battling against Jesus Christ, the God of Israel. Lord, I pray that we would be able to stand firm, that we would be reminded of this hope that we have in Jesus. And God, we would look forward to that day when Jesus finally sets up his kingdom to rule and to reign for all of eternity. We pray it in his name. Amen.